Welcome to the Audio Spells production of Journeys of the Astral Path's Michael. I'm Robin, and we are ecstatic to bring you this show. Please help us grow by subscribing, 5-star reviews, liking, sharing, and commenting wherever you enjoy your podcasts. For more information and our full credits, please visit www.theastralpaths.com or search Journeys of the Astral Paths on Facebook. And now, let us cast you a spell.
It's been a lazy day. I had company last night. No, not some fast date, but a truly good friend. And my old knife-fighting instructor, Ray. He'd flown to Denver, yes, actually in body, to teach a self-defense seminar because his uncle was under the weather. Ray had taught his special skill before he'd been awakened to his astropath powers, but after that, he tended to stick to teaching his kind. I was happy to have him here. It is different when you're both in your body and hanging out. It's a real sign of friendship, because the one thing astropaths fear is being caught in danger in their actual body. I don't see Ray often, but we do meet up at Marlowe's on occasion, or I'll astro project over to see him for a tune-up session. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here. After all, my story is full of Ray events coming up. Suffice it to say, he and I drank far too much scotch last night, his favorite drink. Last night, I went a little too far, and today, I'm paying the price. But I am filled with memories, coming in on a wave of an addled brain. Marlowe was waiting for me when I walked out of my poker game. Doesn't take a mind reader to see you won. How do you hold a poker face while playing? Marlowe asked. I guess I am pretty excited. I tripled your money from 300 to 1200. You quadrupled my money, and this quick math is another concern I have about you making a living at poker, he retorted. Actually, I have great math skills. I'd just gotten too excited and misspoke. In high school, I'd loved calculus, trigonometry, and studying. Probability in pre-calculus was what first led me to dabble in gambling. Well, we can refine your poker skills at another time. We need to get to this dinner date, Marlowe concluded. This'll be simple enough. You go on about your date, and once you've both settled in, I'll happen by the table and greet you like an old friend. Then I'll get a glance into Officer Sanchez's eyes and we'll know everything. I nodded in agreement. How's your chi? He asked me. You've been out several hours. Oh, I feel strong, I assured him. He looked into my eyes and we projected to the parking lot of Old Chicago's on Wadsworth Boulevard. I knew the place well, as it was only 15 minutes up the road from my apartment. So I pictured the far corner of the lot near a large dumpster containers. He smiled at our rather shadowy landing spot. You're getting better. This is a good spot to arrive. Yeah, I thought you'd like this, I bragged, pointing to the restaurant across the lot. There it is, and we're right on time. I went straight into the bar area after asking for a table for two. Marlowe milled outside a bit and then walked in and posted up at the bar with his back to where I was sitting. She was a cop, and our faked meetup might not be enough of a ruse to fool her. But honestly, I figured his reading of her would be a minute, and then she and I would go on about our date, and he'd slip out the front door and back to Chicago. She hadn't arrived, so I ordered a Belgian brown ale. I guess trying to fit in to this beer-swelling bar because I really wasn't that big of a beer drinker. And wait for her. The beer went down smooth. I was trying not to look at Marlo and give us away, but as I finished the beer, I thought to him, maybe she isn't coming. From the mirror behind the bar, he could see her enter. She's arriving now. I stood up as she approached my table. Angela, I'm so glad you had time to meet me. Hey, Opera, she greeted. I wasn't sure whether to hug or kiss her on the cheek or just sit back down, so I stood there a bit awkwardly. She was smiling and more relaxed than our first date, and I was glad to see her. But while noticing her smile, I allowed my eyes to meet hers and immediately melded into a mental connection. Within her mind, I was swimming through random thoughts at rapid speed. It was overwhelming, and I was struggling to concentrate. I heard our waiter arrive, saying something before he rushed off, but I couldn't make it out because I was completely tuned into her and tuned out to my surroundings. I was seeing her playing with her friends in grade school, and it was as pleasant a memory as anyone could have about such a carefree day of giggling and babbling nonsense and breathless running about on a playground. Then her uncle approaches, and he was calling her home. He was an angry man, drunk, reeking of cigarettes and whiskey. Fear gripped her, and I could feel the horror in my own body. I was trembling as she was. I could not control this feeling. I was drowning in her pool of sorrow. So I directed a question to her. How do you survive? Her thoughts zoomed in time, and I saw from her eyes, not as a child, but as an adult. She was in her police uniform, like she had been the day we'd met, and before her was a man on his knees. His hands were tied behind his back, and his head was bowed. He was murmuring in a pleading tone, "You're crazy. You were always all I cared about. I made you strong. I took care of you, right? I made you, you." "You made this," she screamed. I saw her put a gun to the back of his head, slowly slide back the hammer with her thumb, and pull the trigger. The thunderous reverberation of the gun and the bullet's collision with the man's skull snapped me from my connection. "What's wrong with you?" she asked. "Are you already drunk or something?" She sat down and I dropped down into my seat, nearly missing it. "Jesus, you are drunk," she complained. "Sorry, no, I'm just a bit dizzy." Marlo had seen what had happened. He walked up behind me. "Michael, is that you?" he said for effect. Angela looked at him with such an odd expression. It was as I had worried. She didn't think our meeting was chance at all. Her eyes narrowed with suspicion. "How have you been?" Marlo continued, reaching his hand down to me to shake. I stood up, shaking his hand and trying to regain my composure. My skin was crawling, and all I wanted to do was get the hell out of there as fast as I could. "Marlo, I've been good," I stuttered. "Long time no see." He motioned towards Angela politely and offered her a smile. "I can see you're busy, but give me a call sometime." Angela looked up at him and gave him a friendly nod, and of course, that was all he needed to probe her mind and know what I knew. He went further, learning the three murders were not her first, that in fact she had, very early on in her police career, shot a man in self-defense, and shortly after, pursued her uncle and executed him. For years, she believed her demons were exorcised, but something triggered her lust for vengeance again. Her lust to vanquish the memory of the destroyer of her youth, the Diablo of her nightmares. Marlo thought to me, "Stay here with her for a moment." Then he walked on out of the restaurant. I was not happy to hear I was staying. But I guessed he had his reasons. I sat back down. "Friend of yours?" Angela asked. "Yes, my old teacher, actually. But we keep in touch," I replied. "So what about a drink?" "Yes, I'll take a beer and a shot of tequila," she said. "It's been a long day." I spun around looking for that waiter, but he was helping another table. The bartender was free, so I hopped up and went to the bar to get her drinks directly. The bartender stepped up to me and I ordered her beer and shot and pulled a 20 out and laid it down on the bar. In the mirror behind the bartender, I saw Angela get up and leave. She had a hunch something was up, and she was instinctual enough to know it was time to roll. She shoved through the door, and I was striding behind her, not sure what to say or do or where the hell Marlowe had gone. I rushed out the door, but didn't see her. I looked left and saw nobody, and stormed to the right, where many cars were parked, but nobody was around. Not Marlowe, and not Angela. In a flash, I felt a crack to the back of my head, and then both of my legs were collapsed as she put her knees into the back of mine and thrust, putting me in a kneeling position. Her cop moves were unstoppable. I felt completely out of control. I threw my hands up to try to grab for her, but then she grabbed my hair and slammed my face into the trunk of the car in front of me. My head was ringing, my vision blurred. I was too stunned to move. Then I felt it, a small barrel of a gun pressed against the base of my neck. Considering what I'd seen her do, I can't express how terrified I was. "What the fuck," she growled. "Who was that guy, and who are you? You're too dumb for internal affairs. Who are you?" "I'm Michael, the drunk you warned to keep it down, and the guy who took you to coffee." "No, something else. Something between you and that scarecrow-looking dude." "Not a very polite description," I heard Marlowe say from behind her. I didn't see what he did, but the barrel was gone from my neck, and I spun around to see him standing above her and the gun skidding across the parking lot. Angela wasn't done. She tried a circular kick designed to sweep Marlowe's legs, but he projected from where her legs were to where her head was and put a sharp kick into her temple. She went limp. The sound of police sirens erupted. A police car had entered the parking lot and, spotting the action, had hit its lights and sirens. "Return to your body," Marlowe ordered sharply. "Now." I did as I was told, concentrating and reanimating my body in the safe room back in Pagonius Mansion. I climbed to my feet. I was shaky. My chi was very weak. Marlowe wasn't back, and I wanted to shake him and ask him what was going on, but all I could do was wait. Marlowe arrived a few minutes later. "Well," he said, seeing me looming above him, "that was an eventful evening. How are you holding up?" "I'm fine. My face was hamburger in Denver, but awakening here, I'm perfect." "The ultimate reset," he agreed. "But what happened?" He sat up, exhaling a deep sigh. "Officer Sanchez has been arrested." "How?" I asked. "Before I explain, let's take a moment to talk about this as a learning opportunity and teachable moment." "I failed by letting her get the best of me," I said. He paused in thought. "Failure and success are too binary. Did you do the right thing? No. Did you survive? Yes. So listen, if someone holds a gun to the back of your head ever again, especially someone you've seen execute others, you return to your body immediately. I interrupted him. What about the seamless life? The key word, Michael, is life. You return and you live. That trumps the seamless life every time. I got you. But what happened? You've got to explain what happened. He poured himself a glass of orange juice, took a drink, and told me the story. I left you because I had retrieved the truth of her guilt and the phone number for her superior officer, Captain Janet Sharper. I called Captain Sharper the second I left the bar. It was her personal number, so I reached her quickly. Thank goodness. I have a feeling seconds might have cost you your life. But what did you say? It doesn't make sense. She's a cop. I would guess they wouldn't believe you. Yes. So the police car that arrived had been sent to take my statement. I told the captain that I'd witnessed a woman take a man into the house where the murders were committed, but was afraid to come forward because she was a cop. Until I saw her sitting in the bar across the room from me at Old Chicago's. That I was certain about what I'd seen, and I was afraid for my life. So you knocked her out, and the police arrived, I prompted, still a bit unclear as to what put her in jail. You were gone. I claim she attacked me, trying to shut me up, but that I was able to, in my panic, get the gun away. Her captain was very interested in my information, despite my vagueness, and I read in her thoughts that she had her suspicions of Officer Sanchez's statement when she'd taken it. Of course, the personal information I gave was false. I do not want anything else to do with this, but I believe the good captain will see justice done.